Welcome to Exit 425. It's where we live. My name is Steve Ray. Adrian Foster has been the mayor of Clarington since 2010 after 7 years on council. Since Adrian was elected to the office, the population has increased by 20% and 30% since 2006, and the growth is far from over. Part of Clarington's identity is the nuclear station, and that is being augmented by a new small modular reactor, which will be a model for the world. While Clarington has an amazing opportunity to do things right, the current environment in the province may severely limit the town's autonomy. One of the areas is our nearly 35 kilometers of shoreline along Lake Ontario. Town staff estimate we have access to around 16% of that, but the waterfront trail even accesses less than that directly, and I am unsure what constitutes access. I hope that we can talk about the long-proposed municipal waterfront park near Darlington Provincial Park today. Adrian, thank you for being here to speak with me about Clarington 2023 and 24, and specifically Exit 425.
It is always a pleasure to join you. And I had to drive so far, right, for this interview.
Sorry for making it so inconvenient.
So, true story, used to going down to Rogers. I was on Rogers the other day and I didn't look in my calendar. So it was like this. It was a virtual interview. So I ended up taking the virtual interview, in the coffee room at Rogers, because of course no Rogers staff are at Rogers because it was virtual. Great.
They often do that with news reports anyways, where they're just in a different part of the room. So on your thank you webpage to Clarington following your re-election, you speculated that there would be many challenging issues. It's safe to say that started right away after the election. What sort of challenges are you still dealing with?
Oh boy. So right after the election, of course, and you were talking about the small modular reactors, we had the news of OPG shifting the headquarters over to Oshawa. We've talked about this. Those challenges continue, although we've had some great dialogue with OPG and what can come forward, but economic development and all the development that we thought would follow in the energy park with headquarters there, that of course has been thrown a little bit awry, if you will. Challenges that we didn't anticipate, if I look at Durham Region and locally, is the homeless issue. That is exploding. Clarington has largely dodged the bullet for now, and we know that that's not going to continue to be the case. So if we look at our neighbors, to the west, to the north, to the east, there are significant problems with encampments, and people need somewhere to live, and no quick and easy solution to that.
I'm running a series called Poverty in Durham, and have interviewed Mark Carlos from Redemption House Recovery, and my last interview that was published today was with the Ben Earle and Gail Nyberg from Feed the Need in Durham, and they shed some incredible light on poverty in Durham. And that visible poverty is one part of it that's creeping in, but in Clarington right now, it's the invisible poverty where people are still trying to pay their mortgages, but are finding a great deal of financial difficulty. So it's interesting that you raised that as one of the new issues.
Well, so I'm going to give a plug to Ben Earle. I think you know that Ben is the president of the Clarington Board of Trade. And yes. I mean, you don't see someone operating NGO typically representing business interests. How awesome is that in our community, you've got that, the alignment, and truth be told, he's got to run a business. He's doing things that a business would never do, but has to worry about all the metrics that business people do. I'm just so impressed with that. But you talk about the invisible. I mean, there are people living in tents because they can't find rental or afford rental, and there is no way they can get into a house, that are living in tents, getting in their cars and going to work in the morning. We've got seniors where if, you know, if they've split up, they couldn't afford. Families where the landlord is selling the house. You've got you've got the parents who have always worked, always paid their bills, are working, are paying their bills, and there's nowhere to go. And then the with the refugees coming into town, and this has been a fight with John Henry and the federal government. The last I heard, I believe it was somewhere in the area of $20 million in unanticipated costs for housing refugees. You know, so the feds have been suggesting that housing is a municipal issue, but bringing the people in is a federal issue, and we can't deal with the homeless that we have already. And don't get me wrong, we need immigration. Our whole economy works on consumption, and you know, birth rates as low as they are. This is not an anti-immigrant thing, but the federal government and the province need to step up.
A complex issue, bringing people in from other countries, and you know, refugees who have skills and certificates in their own country that cannot find work here because of certification issues. That's an issue.
Yeah, you know, my favorite line is if it was too easy, it wouldn't be any fun. I'm willing to give up on the fun to look for some easy. We could use some easy, but even beyond poverty, I mean, a huge part of the problem is that people that are making well above average incomes that can't find or can't afford rent or afford to buy houses. So the market, and it's not just here. You can look at some of the cities and states. The Netherlands are going through the exact same issue. A fundamental right is having somewhere to live, and that shouldn't, in a country like Canada, that should not be a tent.
I do remember visiting Vancouver a few years ago, and my friend's family all went through St. George's. It's a private, big, well-established private school. And that school actually bought houses adjacent to the school so that the staff could afford to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was bad then in Vancouver, and we all kind of pointed and said, well, at least that's not us.
Yeah.
But it's quickly becoming us.
So, I mean, for anyone watching, we're doing a horrible job of this, and I don't think anyone understands how we got to where we are. But if you look at many cities in the U.S., big cities that are smaller than Toronto, it's an absolute disaster. And if we don't get a grasp on this, we're probably headed in that direction. Isn't that an uplifting content? So, you opened up to me, and I took us down this rabbit hole.
But that's one of the issues that we're dealing with. And that's, a fundamental thing that has to be dealt with somehow as Clarington particularly grows. And, with Durham's population generally set to pop historic levels very soon.
Yeah.
Clarington is close behind, and Clarington really is in a position to do things right because there's so much development that's left to happen, unlike a community like Mississauga or Brampton. Mm-hmm. And so, this is just one more of the elements that we need to get right. And some assistance from the provincial and federal governments would be really good that way, because they control a lot of the laws around it all. So,
well, that and the money. And at the end of the day, it's money that we're going to have to, how you build affordable housing. And the developers, as much as it's easy to slam developers with interest rates, with the cost of land, with the cost of building materials and the difficulty finding labor, many of their projects at market aren't doable right now. If you look at how many houses, so how do you do that and build affordable housing? Or attainable anyway, we could spend this whole episode talking about that.
Well, and affordable is one of those relative terms, right? So,
yes.
For one person, a tent is affordable. For someone else, 6,000 square feet is affordable. So it's it's just one of those odd terms that the press likes to use and senior politicians like to use as well. Long ago, one of your goals was to define CURTIS, Exit 425, and give it a definable identity. And how's that going?
Well, we talked about OPG and the headquarters. So the headquarters being there and being able to market the energy park would have. You notice I'm speaking in past tense here.
Yes, of course.
Would have been really helpful. The region does have what they're calling Project Woodward, which is selling that surplus property. We need to get a better grasp on, you know, how that's really going to move things forward. Yeah. So, you know, I expect we will be hearing some positive things from OPG and what they are doing on the site down there. For any of your listeners, you know, they might have seen the disagreement. Am I being gentle in my discussion there between OPG and Clarington when the announcement came out? And it was the way that they did that without engaging us or involving us. A decision was made without any help. There has been a significant change. They're looking at and reaching out to local business to see what they can do with our business community. And I do expect that we will have an announcement beyond the, I think you mentioned the SMR. It's going to be four of those now, but I think we'll hear some positive things going on down there, which might put that whole marketing thing back on track to get that development going.
What about the actual, like, the downtown of CURTIS? What is there any work being done to define that and kind of make it more like a downtown than a strip mall?
So the trick in the future is which downtown. So as we get the development around the GO train station, to have two denser bits, what we had called downtown along Highway 2 being one, but I think the potential around the GO train to have a very vibrant hub will be interesting. And of course, there's been some really good news on the GO train file. Downtown, you've got the Mon development that is further on, some higher density. Had a meeting several weeks ago with part of the property in behind the Esso station. It looks as if they're moving ahead. But again, it is right now getting financing. It's difficult for developers to get things rolling under the current environment. So an awful lot of stuff that we thought was moving forward now, not so much. So we got to wait to see those rates come back a little bit and maybe say more easing of inflation, although, what we don't clue into is the cost of, even at 3% inflation, that's still adding on to those huge numbers that we had the last couple of years. So 3% sounds good. It's not really helping.
Development charges. We've talked about this before, and historically a tool to fund new development. And this was taken away by the province with the promise that they'd make it right for municipalities, that they'd be taken care of. Has our premier or have our MPPs clarified this at all yet?
No. So DCs, we still collect them. They were looking for what was defined as affordable housing. And we just talked that there are challenges with that. So there's a lot of ongoing discussion now with the province. They've come out with some ideas of what's affordable. But even for the 5% of affordable housing that Durham region thinks we're going to see. So if we look at 95% will be regular development, 5% affordable. Over the next 10 years, Durham anticipates that Durham region, not including Clarington, will lose about $200 million in development charges. And we don't know how we're going to be made whole. And that's stuff that builds roads. We're hearing people complain that the infrastructure isn't in place for all of the development. So you reduce the money available for the infrastructure for the development, and someone's got to pay, right? And you know who that is.
Well, let's just put our hands up now.
Great.
So that's part of the net effect on Exit 425 in Clarington. What does that look like for us, though? And already we've seen, I think, projects put on hold that were planned. So what is the overall net effect for us on that?
So again, we do need to understand how the province is going to make us whole on that. And for folks that are watching this, the challenge is if we need to build a road and we don't get development charges, the only other spot that we get that money is property taxes. So all of us, myself included, as a resident, we can end up paying more taxes to enable people to come to Clarington. You know, growth is supposed to pay for growth. It is simply not fair. I mean, the other problem is that to put the safeguards in place, if developers get a discount on development charges, how do we guarantee that that money is actually going back and making that house affordable? How do we guarantee that the person buying the house needs an affordable house? There are a whole bunch of loose bits of string out there.
And some people argue that new development should be funded by the tax base at large, not just the developers or the new buyers, because it benefits everyone. I'm a little bit more on the side of the, why are the new people signing up for the cable company or internet getting the best deal?
I agree fully with you that if we are happy with the level of service that we have, so if you could imagine that we stopped all development tomorrow and people were happy with the community as it is, your taxes would sort of go along on a maintenance schedule. You know, what do we need to keep the existing services? As we need to build more libraries, as we need to build more arenas, while we don't build them, the school board does, but as you build more schools, why should the existing taxpayers pay for all of this to accommodate new people coming to town and the profits that developers make on bringing all of those new people to town? So I would spin it the other way, that you pay your share when you come.
And certainly, once those people are here and established in their home, they're paying the taxes to the municipality. And so, that contributes that. But the initial outlay for the infrastructure, all the sewage, all the new roads, really, that should be borne by the people who want to make money from it.
Yeah, and the people that are enjoying the services. So, frequently we'll hear from residents saying that, council loves development because of all the money we get. But the reality is, as development comes, we've got to spend more money. So it's like a family having extra kids and the suggestion that you don't need to spend more money on groceries. Well, of course you do. As people move into the area, we need to expand services. So, growth does not generate a financial benefit. Those additional taxes get spent supporting all of the services that the new residents need.
When you're into this term, what excitement are you looking forward to? You'll hear a lot of this from me about Curtis Shores Waterfront Park. And do you think an MZO will turn this into Grimsby on the Lake? I did send you some links to pictures of that.
Yeah, you did. In light of what we've seen happen with the Greenbelt, and we were talking about, I think the last time we did one of those, it was around partially around the Curtis property being pulled out of the Greenbelt. I think the province is going to be exceptionally hesitant to push things forward without council approval. So not only did we see all the lands go back into the Greenbelt, but the urban boundary expansions that were being pushed by the province have been walked back. The public have expressed their concern with urban sprawl moving ahead. So I think we're probably in a better space now. The waterfront in Curtis, we're struggling with that. You may recall that we went to the public and had public consultation in terms of what the park looked like, what development looked like. We are trying to nail down how many houses we'll allow the developer to build and how much property. And it really is that simple. The developer wants to build way more than we want to allow to be built. We want way more land than what the developer wants to give us. So we'll get there, but it is a long and difficult process, not helped by the fact that our staff are just so busy with all the development that's going on. There are only so many hours in a day.
We're buoyed by the idea that the stated waterfront strategy goal is to create a sanctuary where people can relax and escape, to increase public access between our waterfront areas and provide more lakefront recreational space and more trail connections to the waterfront from our downtowns. And I can't help but think of the underpass at exit 425 and just how uninviting that is.
Yeah.
And then expanding pedestrian and cycling access.
Yeah. So, and what a shame, you know, they just redid that. And the reality is it should have been widened. I think I told you the story that I will infrequently ride my bike down to the provincial park. And, you know, man, that is a scary, scary place to ride a bike. But when they were doing that, you know, I asked the specific question, are accommodations going to be made? And yeah, they smoothed out the really bad lumps and put what appears to me to be about a two-foot lane. You know, it does nothing to make me feel any better about riding a bike down there. But, you know, we are exploring how we might get people down to the lake with the development that'll come around the GO train. So there's high density coming in there. And again, with the developer on the other side. And I know I've said this a few times, and the but is right now it's tough for developers to make money. There isn't a lot moving ahead because of the current environment. And if they're not making money, they're not going to be generous in providing stuff that we want, right?
Has the province offered or been asked to assist in the establishment of the waterfront park and anything down and around that area?
We had some discussion with Minister Pacini in terms of what they, and this was when he was Minister of the Environment. So there may be some things that they can do on naturalizing the areas that we own down there, you know, moving ahead with paths and whatnot. But the big fly in the ointment is the municipality owning that waterfront property. So we need to get that fundamental piece done before we start looking at the secondary pieces.
You mentioned the Hydro One's headquarters and that change, and the OPG headquarters change, and has that affected the GO Transit, which we know we're looking at 2041, I think?
Probably not 41. We are hoping no. We are hoping 2028 as a date. The province hasn't nailed down the date yet. The significant move on the GO Train file is Durham Region, working with Clarington and Oshawa, came up with a plan that I'll roll back a bit. There are two fundamental problems in bringing the GO Train out. One is getting the rails and trains on the rails, but the province, you may recall, wanted developers to build the train stations. And the problem is developers don't build train stations. The other issue is where you have a number of developers that own property adjacent to where a train station is. Trying to bring them all together and figure out who's going to pay what is virtually impossible. So the province says it's not passed yet. I think it's second reading. The ability for the municipalities, Durham Region, the lower tiers, to collect a fee, like a development charge, on intensification in the immediate areas of the train station. That fee will cover the cost of building the stations. So the plan will be to move forward, build all four stations at the same time, and recover that money as the development goes in. So essentially, Clarington, Oshawa, and Durham Region took the problem of building the stations away from the province. And now we're looking at them saying, okay, you know, we solved that. They're allowing us to solve, but it was an initiative that we came up with. We've got that nut cracked. Now you need to get going on the rest. So no dates have been pinned down, but I know they are looking forward to the election in 26 and understand full well that they need shovels in the ground. People need to see tangible action on that.
There have been a lot of vague promises, so I would agree with you that shovels in the ground would actually do a lot to reassure people, and it's nice to hear, even though it's still far away, 2028 versus 2041.
Right. Yeah, you know, there is a very healthy, well-earned cynicism. What do they call that? Learned behavior.
That's right, yes. One of the other things you talked about on that welcome page was informing people and keeping them informed. It seems to me that the municipalities reaching out more for input from residents. The latest is input regarding recreation and cultural activities. I participated in one last week in Bowmanville, and in fact, tomorrow night in Curtis. I say tomorrow night, even though this will be published on December 1st, I think. So, it just seems like the town is reaching out more. And you committed to that on your page about keeping people informed. Overall, how is that going?
Going well with a major glitch. I will look to, we did our strat plan. The strategic plan will be endorsed by council on December 4th. Just came last Friday. We had, I think it was over 2,400 people participate either in person, by a survey, or survey on the web, in the strat plan, which is beyond anything that we have seen before. So the credit goes to staff, but also to people who are taking the time to get involved in the, I've actually got it right here. So our parks, recreation and culture master plan. So if people can go to the website and help us with this, and it is, thank you for bringing it up. It's really important. The feedback we get back from the public is going to help us determine where we are spending money and what we are spending money on. Is it waterfront? I know, you know, you're really looking forward to additional ice. We have a significant emerging community that are looking at cricket pitches. We don't know how deep do we need a bunch more cricket pitches, ball, soccer on the culture side. So the feedback from that survey will determine what we do moving forward. Now the major fly in the ointment is Metroland going bankrupt. We use the newspaper to get statutory requirements, reaching out to the public, and we are at this point in time a little bit lost for those who don't have access to social media, to digital, or just don't prefer to get things that way. We are going to struggle for a while yet, and you know, we've talked about doing additional newsletters, but the cost of that, if companies that had been in business for 100 years. Can't figure out how to make money with a newspaper, you know, we're sure as heck not going to be able to do that.
That's right. And that really left Clarington particularly without a great deal of media. Thank goodness Exit 425 is here.
There you are, right? Filling a gap.
But maybe we need a TV station or something like that of our own, right?
Yeah, there. I can
so
see it now.
Hopefully,
all Foster all the time.
There you go.
Maybe not.
I hope you're as hopeful as I am that all this reaching out will generate more engagement. We've talked about that after the last election. Just the disappointing actual turnout and number of people voting for particular jobs like mayor. Not that we don't want you as the mayor, but, you might feel better if you had more people actually casting their vote.
Oh, absolutely. The scary part of that is particularly with electronic voting was so simple and so quick to do. You wonder why people don't vote. Are they so disillusioned with the system? Which is entirely possible. Do they simply not care? Which is maybe worse than being disillusioned. Especially at the local level, every day when you step out of your house, you touch so many things that we are directly involved in and engaged with. And we're also the most accessible level of government. good luck picking up the phone to try to talk to the prime minister or premier, or, you know, book a delegation to go to Queen's Park to address Queen's Park or Ottawa. And yet, you know, to a lesser degree at Durham Region and at the local level, you can do that. You can actually have an impact that you can see.
The people we see every day for the issues and things that are every day, right? And as you pointed out, you know, really, I talk about how by the time you actually wake up and then leave the bathroom, the number of governments that have been responsible for just that daily process is staggering, and most of that is municipal. And you know, that's like I say in our logo or our motto here is it's where we live. So it's all about this. So, well, I appreciate you taking your time today to join me, and you know, Mayor of Clarington, I know you're busy. You're heading off to another event right after we finish recording.
And I am.
So thank you so much for joining me. Maybe where can people reach you?
Reaching me, the easiest way is email, mayor@clarington.net. And very frequently, people's concerns will go directly to staff and be resolved before I even see them, which is a wonderful. And before we log off, I mean, we are right before the holiday season. Steve, I will probably not see you before, but to everyone watching, you know, I hope they have a safe, happy, relaxing holiday season, and I'm hoping that the new year brings even more excitement and good news for everyone.
Yeah, we hope it's not too exciting for everybody, though. So,
well, exciting enough, yes.
And for all who are listening and who were watching, both of us, and now just Mayor Foster, thank you for listening to this episode of Exit 425. Please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use. Our mission is to provide substantial information and education that goes where you want, because it's where we live. Exit 425 is a production of Studio 38 Audio, copyright 2023. My name is Steve Ray. Even though those who are watching can't see me now, if you have a question or would like more information about Exit 425, join our Exit 425 Facebook group, like the Facebook page, check out Instagram, Medium, X, and TikTok, or email me at exit425401@gmail.com. Exit 425, it's where we live.